So this is something I learned too. Gravity. Gravity is horrible. It's just nasty. It's horrible. You really don't like it. You just don't realize it because you've always lived in it. And I talked earlier about, as a rookie, you worry about transitioning to space and adapting to space. You never really worry about coming back home. Because I was 36 when I flew for the first time. It's like, okay, I've been on the planet for 36 years. I'll be able to come back, and it's really no issue. But as I mentioned, I transitioned to being a space person. It was normal to float. I felt very comfortable. I felt like I'd been doing it forever. And I wasn't, even to the point where we started re-entering on my first mission, I wasn't worried about coming back home. We're re-entering. I'm holding my flight procedures, you know, watching the computers, doing my job. And I noticed that I was having to engage my arm muscles to hold this book up, and this book was getting heavy. So first of all, heavy had no meaning until that point, and it's like, what the heck is going on? I looked over at the G meter, and it was only a third of a G. I was like, oh my goodness, am I going to be able to stand up when we land? Because this is horrible. And I felt this force from nowhere, and started pushing me into my seat and pushing me down, and I started feeling heavy. And it was weird, and it made no sense, and it was horrible, and I wanted it to go away, but it didn't. It got worse. Okay, fine. But that was so strange, because that was a perception change I never expected to have. The fact that gravity is horrible, and it makes no sense. Because it made no sense to me that all of a sudden there was this external force from somewhere acting on me to hold me to my seat, because that was not the life that I had been living for the last 10 days. And I started thinking about it, you know, because this happened every single time I re-entered. It's like, oh my God, this is horrible. Can I just not, I just don't want to come back. But I realized, you know, we don't understand gravity. We can describe it. We have equations that tell us how much, you know, it is. But the physics behind it, why two masses create a force between them, we don't get. There are some hypotheses out there, but we don't really understand it. And from my viewpoint, we could live without it. It would be fine. It really would. Because this takes a huge amount of energy. When I came back from space station after 4.5 months, it took about 2 weeks for my body to get used to just operating at, you know, recreating the energy level I needed to operate day to day. By 5 or 6 o'clock for about 2 weeks, I just wanted to lay on the ground because that's where gravity wanted to meet me, and I was okay with that. I mean, it was, you know, and after about that time, you know, that natural energy level, that recalibration to operate in gravity kind of clicked back into place, but oh, it was horrible. So I will say, okay, I spent, you know, I don't know, 5 minutes just totally disrespecting gravity. I will say a couple things for it, just to be biased, I mean unbiased. Hot showers, awesome. You can't have hot showers without gravity. We take sponge baths on the space station. So I had 4.5 months of cold feed and cold sponge baths, and I was so looking forward to a hot shower when we got back. So gravity helps there, right? Because you turn on the faucet, the water actually falls on your head, and it's hot. It's beautiful. And the other thing is, how you have to operate in your day-to-day job is a little bit more complicated because there's no gravity. And if you can imagine, you know, you have a task to do. Maybe you're cooking. Maybe you're working on the car. Maybe you're getting ready to study. And so you're gathering all your stuff up that you need to do your task. And you're walking to the workplace or the table or the kitchen counter or wherever where you're going to do your task. And you realize, forgot my pencil. What do? You put your stuff down. And you go back and get your pencil, and you come back, and guess what? Your stuff is still there, you know? It's a beautiful thing. I mean, there were so many times on orbit, I just wanted a microsecond of gravity so I could put something down, and it would stay there, and I knew it would be there when I got back. Because we have to manage our stuff at a whole nother level. You need, actually, I had zippers in the pockets of my pants so that even if I put something in my pockets, they wouldn't float out, because of course it will. But, you know, bungees, Velcro, Ziploc bags, duct tape, very valuable. Friction-fitting things, you know, if you have a crack in a cabinet, you can sneak some papers in there and just friction-fit stuff. When you're opening up the white containers we use to contain things, you have to kind of be very careful when you open the zipper, because if you jostle around too much, poof, everything comes out. So having an external force helping you to hold stuff down is actually not a bad thing. You can manage without it. It just takes a lot more overhead in your everyday life. So those are the two instances where gravity is actually helpful. That's it. Trust me. Now, the thing that's cool about not having gravity is things like this happen. This is water. And so I can open this water bottle, and what's going to happen? The water's going to stay in the water bottle because gravity is acting on the water to keep it in the water bottle. When you take gravity away, different phenomenon come into play. You know, things that are at second or third order forces start to take over. The water is behaving the way it does right now in my hand because the surface forces and surface energy becomes more dominant. And for those of you who've done thermodynamics before, you've calculated this, and again, you go back to the difference between intellectual and experiential knowledge. You can calculate this, but it's much more dramatic when you see it. It's like, oh, that's what it means to wet a surface and spread out until the energy is equilibrated. But this is why we have the space station. Up there, in the absence of gravity, we can do experiments and learn things that we cannot learn here on Earth because gravity is completely dominating and swamping out these other phenomena. So we have a lot of fluids experiments going up there that intersects material science and combustion and human physiology, cellular biology, botany, you name it. We've got experiments going on up there on the space station, and we've been doing it for 12 years, and it's an international effort. Scientists from all over the world, not only just the member countries, but all over the world can submit proposals to the space station, and we're learning more and more every day. And the interesting thing about being up there, too, is the fact, as you well know, that sometimes the most interesting discoveries that you make happen because you're just tinkering around. It's serendipitous. And so by having a constant presence up there and having this constant science going on, we don't know what we could yet discover. We have people who propose experiments and we run them, but there's discoveries waiting to be made that we don't know. And that's why the space station is such a powerful force for exploration for all of us around the world. So another thing that I learned, this phrase, use it or lose it, actually has a whole new meaning to me. If you take nothing else home tonight, this is what I want you to remember. And this has to do with what happened and what I experienced with readapting back after 4.5 months in space. When you come back, first of all, let me start. When you stay in space for longer than 2 weeks, studies have shown that what happens is you start to lose minerals from your bones and they become brittle and your muscle mass, your muscles start to atrophy, so you start to lose muscle mass. This can be stopped by exercising. I exercised every day but 3 days while I was on space station. I came back, I lost no bone mass, I lost no muscle mass. I did, and that happened because I took the exercise seriously. We have 3 ways. You get 2 hours a day to exercise, including changing clothes and things like that. We have 3 ways of exercising. You see the picture of the treadmill at the bottom, and the way that works, and this is good for dynamic loading. So you put the harness on, it fits a little bit like a backpack harness. It's got 2 strong bungees on it, and I could lean forward as I was running and I'd get a good dynamic loading on my hips, and I could lean backwards as I was running and it would do a good dynamic loading of my lower limbs. And so that was a really good dynamic load on my body. We have a bicycle ergometer as well, and so if I wanted to do a cardiovascular workout, I'd strap my feet into the bicycle ergometer and I could do a really good workout of my heart muscle and my cardio system by pedaling really fast for 2 minutes and, you know, breathing really hard and get my heart pumping and then pedaling slow for a minute and then pedaling really fast for 2 minutes. And so that was a really good cardiovascular workout. And then we have something called a resistive exercise device, which is basically a device. It's a big monster piece of equipment. It's got 2 vacuum cylinders on it. And you pump a vacuum into those cylinders, and then you can set loads on how much you want to pull against that vacuum. And you can do things like, squats and deadlifts and shoulder lifts and bench presses and heel raises and all the other kind of weightlifting exercises that give you good static loading on your body. If you do that, like I said, you'll be fine. When you come back from station, what happens is you have a 6-week rehab program. So even though I came back strong, There were still things that I needed to do to rehab over that six-week period. And it works about 2 to 3 hours a day with a trainer. And actually, when we landed, after being up there for 4.5 months, I was able to stand up and walk off the shuttle, although my vestibular system was all messed up. You know, that fluid in my inner ear, my brain had gotten used to not having the signals from the fluid in my inner ear. And we came back, and it was going a little crazy. It didn't know what was going on. I felt like I had a standing wave in my head because it was just sloshing around. And, you know, this kind of movement is bad when you come back because you're already feeling a little bit off of your level, if you will, because the fluid in your inner ear is giving your brain all kinds of weird signals. This is especially provocative. So I stood up and walked over to the hatch to get off the shuttle, and you have to bend over and kneel to crawl through the hatch. And when I did that, I almost felt like I was taking a face plant. I wasn't, but I felt like it because I had to move my head like this. I walked off. Of course, they made me lay down immediately because the medical people wanted to get to me before my body readapted. You know, that's all the interesting data right there, right when you get back. That took about 3 or 4 hours. Meanwhile, I still feel like I had a standing wave in my head, and I could move around and stand up and walk around after the medical data was done, and I went and took my hot shower, beautiful moment, had some food. I always had a salad, a chocolate milkshake with banana in it, and a cheese pizza when I got back from space every single time. And if you guys want to ask about the food when we get to the Q&A, I'll be happy to answer. And then, you know, I was still feeling kind of wobbly, and if I wanted to look in this direction, I had to do it like this. You know, because I couldn't do this. I couldn't move my head like this. I would have fallen over. And that took about a week to be able to, you know, move the shoulders, move the head, move the eyes, tilt, and not just fall over. But after doing all that, I thought, okay, the best way to settle down, and the engineers will appreciate this, the best way to settle down this fluid sloshing around in my head feeling that I had, so I'm going to give it a vector so it can focus in one direction. So I love talking to engineers. So what I did, I went downstairs in the crew quarters, and I had my mom and my physical trainer and my medical doctor with me. And so what I did, I started walking down the hallways. Now I was walking kind of funny, right, because I was still kind of feeling unbalanced. But I'm walking down the hallway and feeling things kind of settle down, and I get to the first corner. So I go to turn the corner, and smack, I went right into the wall. Because I had my three-dimensional situational awareness, where am I, you know, and then responding to that was not in sync. Like, ow. Okay, so I go to the next corner. I'm like, I am not going to hit the corner this time. So I went around the corner, and you know what I did? I hit the other wall because I overcompensated. So my whole 3D neuromuscular eyes to the brain to the muscles turn now thing was not working, which, oh, by the way, is why they don't let us drive right when we get back from space. So that was really interesting to me because I never had that kind of an effect when I got back from a shuttle mission. I was wobbly on my feet for a few days, but nothing to that extent. It's like, wow, you know, what happened? So I go into physical training and, you know, start working. You know, he starts to work on balance, you know, because you have to be able to stand on one foot, which you can't do, by the way, right when you get back from space. And we worked through it. And about 2.5 weeks in, you know, I'm still feeling heavy, by the way. Remember, I'm still dealing with the gravity thing. It's like, oh, this is killing me. But about 2.5, 3 weeks in, Mark, my trainer, he has two cones about this tall, and he puts them about this far apart, and he puts a bar on top of them, and he has me stand behind him, and he's like, okay, I want you to jump over that. I'm like, really? That's so high, because I'm still feeling heavy. I'm like, I can't do this. You know, where am I going to get this energy from? So, okay, fine. So I jump over it. I jump twice as high as I need to, because I'm still, you know, got this weird gravity thing going on. When I land on the other side of the bar, I landed with my feet flat and my knees locked, you know? And I said, ow. And Mark said, that hurt, didn't it? And I said, yes. He said, do you know why? I said, no. He said, you landed with your feet flat and your knees locked. I said, really? I had no idea, right? So that neuromuscular response, which we all learn as kids, which is reflexive, you don't even think about it, was gone. Use it or lose it. I mean, this is where it really hit me. Wow, my body deteriorated in ways that I never expected, in very subtle ways. And that just was weird to me because, you know, I wasn't using it. I was in a very extreme environment, you know, up there in zero gravity, and I was exercising and stuff, but there was still this decay that was happening. Now, I got it back, right? I jumped over it a couple more times with mindfulness, and now it's all back, and I know to land on the balls of my feet and bend my knees. But that really struck me as like, wow, that whole couch potato thing is true. It takes longer to deteriorate. I mean, you know, 5 years of sitting on the couch and watching TV, you'll deteriorate. It won't happen in 4.5 months. But it really struck me that this whole idea of using your body, using your mind, keeping yourself active was really important, because you are deteriorating, and it will be a slow deterioration here on earth, but it will happen. So I would encourage you, you know, like I said, if you take nothing home tonight but that, please take that, because I was completely shocked that my body had deteriorated like that in ways that I couldn't anticipate. So one of the other questions I get from kids, some adults, a lot from kids, is, were you afraid, as you know, when you went into space? What was the most fearful thing? What were you most afraid of? And you know, and I started thinking about that question after getting it for so many years. I was like, why did they ask me that? Because to me, flying in space, I wasn't afraid. I was excited. You know, I was 12 or so when I decided I had this dream of being an astronaut. I was 36 when I finally got to go. By the time I finally got to go, I was just really happy. Finally, I got to go. And I was just like a little kid again. Oh, I'm going to space. This is great, you know. So to me, the fear wasn't even a factor, because it was something that I wanted to do and I'd been dreaming of doing, and I was just going to go do it. And then I was like, okay, why are they asking me this question? And I think it is because as human beings, we tend to fear things we don't know. We tend to fear the unknown. Whenever you go do something, like I mentioned, I went to England, I was a little nervous, I was out of my comfort zone, it was a little scary, a little intimidating. You know, so I think as human beings, we tend to fear the unknown, we fear the things that we don't understand, we fear things that we don't know anything about. And I was like, oh, okay, that's why these kids are asking me. And I think you guys have all experienced this. Maybe for those of you know how to swim, the first time you got thrown into water and you're paddling around and trying to understand how to swim, and then you learned how to swim, and then it was fine and it was fun. And so that was kind of an interesting revelation to me. It's like, okay, we have this fear of the unknown. But then on the other hand, it's kind of interesting, as human beings, we have this natural propensity, this natural desire, this natural trait to go explore. When you try a new food, or you meet a new person, or you study a new subject, or you take a new route home from work or school, or you visit a new city or whatever, you're exploring, you're expressing that desire, that trait, that need that we have, that drive that we have to explore. And so if you think about it, it's like, wow, we've got these two opposing forces inside of us. Forget the gravity thing, but we've got these two opposing forces inside us, this fear of new, this fear of the unknown, and this desire to go find new things, and this desire to go learn new things and explore the unknown. And so my message to you is, embrace the unknown. That doesn't mean lose all common sense. What that means is, be aware you have these two opposing forces in you, and be willing to embrace the unknown, because that's the place where interesting things happen. That, you know, just outside your comfort zone, that ability to just, you know, let's go find out a little bit about this. It might be kind of fun, you know. That opens up opportunities for you. That opens up new experiences. And then you too can have some of these perception-changing moments like I have. One more slide, and we'll do questions and answers, because that's really the fun part, to find out what you guys would like to learn more about. So my last slide, as an introduction to that, I will say that, you know, if there's a downside to being an astronaut, I think it would have to be that you really don't control your time. You don't control your schedule. The space station program is really complex, especially when you're in training. You know, I mean, I trained for 3.5 years before I went up on my space station mission. Thankfully, they've gotten it down to 2.5 now, but that didn't help me at the time. So there's several crews in training. There's probably 6 or 7 crews in training at any given time. The crews are made up of people that are from different countries. We train in different countries. And there's, of course, just like any coursework, you have prerequisites, and you go to the next class, and you go to the next class. So that's kind of how the training flows. And so there's a group of people, training managers in each country where we train, and they get together, and they have to figure out which crew is going to which country to train on what thing, so that the training's spread out evenly, and the people are in all the different countries evenly. And sometimes some crews have to intersect. You know, two crews have to train together on something. And so it's a really complicated schedule. So therefore, that means when they tell you go here, you go there. And the space station training kind of goes like this. Month in Houston, month in Moscow. Month in Houston, month in Moscow. Month in Houston, 2 weeks in Germany. 2 weeks in Moscow, 2 weeks in Japan. Month in Houston, 2 weeks in Canada. Month in Houston, 4 weeks in Europe. 2 weeks in Russia. Month in Houston, 3 weeks in Japan. I mean, it goes like that for years. So you really don't have control every time. And every now and then it's like, okay, we're all going to take vacation here. So occasionally my friends would call me up and say, hey, you want to go to Florida and hang out on the beach next July? And I just laugh at them. It's like, right. I don't even know what I'm doing 4 months from now. And you're asking me about next July? No, I can't go to Florida next July. So the end result of this was I became really appreciative of time because I had none, because it was all being used up by all the people around me. Now, I was having a blast doing what I was doing. I really enjoyed the job that I had, but it made me realize, it's like, wow, time is actually a really valuable asset. You realize that when you don't have any. It's like, when I spend a minute doing something in the free time that I had, I wanted to be doing something that was valuable to me, because once I spent that minute, I'm not going to get that minute back. And you think about it, you can always earn a dollar. I mean, I started life off as a McDonald's employee selling hamburgers, and then I graduated to waitress, and then I went to university and started getting internships. So I know I've got good skill sets I can fall back on. If I need to make a dollar, I can go get a job at McDonald's. It's no problem. It's taken care of. But if I spend a dollar, I can go make another dollar. If I spend a minute, I can't go make another minute.